Hello, and welcome to the RPG Academy Podcast Twitch channel. My name is Michael, and we are here tonight for Detention Live. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Chris. Chris, say hello to everyone.
Hello, everyone.
And joining us tonight as a special guest co-host is one half of the duo that makes up Tabletop Journeys, and that is Lee Wanika. Lee Wanika, say hello to everyone.
Lee Wanika, say hello to everyone. No, hi, perfect. Everyone. I'm Lee Wanika of Tabletop Journeys.
Well,
you and I got jokes today.
So you have joined us before. You're not a fairly returning guest, but a welcomed returning guest, I should say. Bruno Bush is with us. Thank you for being here. We kind of wanted to bring you on specifically for the used books portion tonight to talk about Star Trek Adventures, second edition, but we are not there yet. So before we get into anything else, we are going to jump into extracurricular. And this is how we kick off the show every week or every other week. And that's basically where we just talk about what we've been up to, things we've been watching, listening, reading, writing, basically anything you'd want to share within the nerdosphere. And Lee Wanika, you're the guest tonight, so I'll let you go first. What you been up to, buddy?
All of the above, on some level or another. In addition to a podcast and running an actual play as part of that podcast, Tabletop Journeys, we do a lot of different things. So we freelance and write as a team. I freelance and write as well as proofread and individually. So I do projects there. So I'm in the middle of one of those individual Lee Wanika kind of freelance projects right now.
Is it still all in the like RPG space, or is this like NASA handbooks?
I wish I could do some NASA handbooks, but I would probably be responsible for some astronauts being stuck in space. So they don't let me do that.
Someone else is too. So, hey.
Yeah. You know, well, so clearly there's a career path.
don't let that hold you back, my friend. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Right. Right. Nothing like bringing the drama.
Yeah.
No. So that is definitely in the TTRPG space. Some friends that I've met through the podcast and through college friends, he has an amazing game, Sentience 2D20, that has been out for a little while. More things are on the way.
So I think we did a show and tell about that. Like very recently, Mo did one. Yeah.
Yep. That is correct. And so I am honored to kind of get the opportunity to kind of be a part of that process. I mean, there are some fantastic creators that are involved in that project, and I won't give away all the juice because I don't think that's appropriate, but what I will say is you'll hear those names in many of the things that we'll talk about in the later part of the show, because they're some of the same writers that work on STA.
Oh, that's so, very cool.
Very excited to get the opportunity to kind of bend pencils with some of the best. But in addition to that, Tabletop Journeys is full steam ahead on the Kickstarter we funded last fall. We're, you know, honestly running a little bit behind. We just sent out an update today's Wednesday, so earlier today, but we also, since drafting that update, we have actually completed our second run through on two of the nine chapters that we're doing, and we've kind of fine-tuned a bit of the process, the look and the sound and the feel of the entire project even better. So we're full steam ahead and getting more done every day. We completed a smaller crowdfund about 2.5 weeks ago that we just sent the order to the printer. So those books will be printed and getting out to backers very shortly. I will actually have some extras that I can take to some of the conventions that I'm doing in the next couple of months, and we're hoping we can generate enough excitement for a nice print run so I can have some stuff to take with me to a catacomb in November. So I have hopes that we do really well with this first part so that I feel confident when I roll into a catacomb with some books. Nice. So that should be really cool. We have an adventure that we kind of developed during Kraken Week, the great idea by Jenny D and Pointy Hat on YouTube. We kind of talked through and generated the idea and got a lot of work done there, but we are nearly done with that. So that's our other small side project that we're kind of clearing that, so then we can put all of our resources into the rest of the factions book. So a lot going on all at once, but very exciting. I love being creative. really the hardest thing for me to do is kind of shut down some of those creative inputs. Like for me, like just getting watching like the little YouTube and real shorts about actual animals and beasts. There's I can't think of the guys, the two people. I mean, there's the young kid who always talks with his wire mic in his hand, and then there's the other guy who kind of stands against a black wall and he kind of talks about it while they show pictures of various critters and poisonous and venomous things doing different stuff. And every time I watch one of those, I'm sending Josh a, this is how we're going to build that creature. This one, we just make it huge and let it do what it does in nature. We're awesome. And I could fill volumes with just watching those shorts, and I think they would be amazing adventures. So, and you know, and quite honestly, a couple of those are in that Kraken Week adventure. So
nice.
You know, it'll be pretty smooth.
Yeah, if I did that, it would all be kittens and cats being silly and dogs being dumb, because those are like 90% of my TikToks are just animal videos.
So I developed a Smilodon saber-toothed tiger based on that. So that's my kitties. And I have about a working piece and some specific rules for various dog breeds for 5e.
Okay.
Where the different dog breeds have different things. They're basically built like sidekicks where they have for 5e. Basically tricks or things that they can be trained to do. Those are their feats. And based on the level and proficiency bonus of that creature will determine how many feats they have access to. And then different breeds will have access to certain numbers based on some of their actual biological issues. So dogs that are considered to be easily trainable and are well known for these various things, they might have access totally to more of those things, but they still have to achieve the correct level to get them. Whereas some dogs are considered not as trainable. That kind of thing. So everybody will have a base feature. Each dog will have a base feature or feat. And then they will, based on how much they can be trained, that'll determine the amount of other ones they have access to.
All right. Very, very cool. Well, thank you for sharing all that with us. Chris, we'll take it to you. What you been up to, buddy?
All right. So normally I'm short and sweet today.
Yep. Okay. Let me strap in.
Yeah.
Hey, hang on.
I'm comfortable. I got my drink.
So normal day-to-day stuff. Finished up the Umbrella Academy.
Don't say anything. I haven't started season 4 yet.
All right. It was well done. That's all I'll say on that. Then this weekend, my wife was out of town. I said, I don't want to sit around doing nothing. So a friend of mine said, hey, come on up to this LARP. Now, I have been doing foam fighting for almost 28 years. It's very competitive. Role playing is limited to, hey, you have a character name. Mostly, you have a character name. Yeah. Well, it's mostly because if I walked out and I was like, Michael, turn around, half the field's going to turn around.
Yeah.
Where if you're, you know, Boab, and well, there's probably not a lot of Lee Winiquas out there. So that might be a safe one to use. But an example of that, it's that you go out 3-4 hours, you're done. You go have dinner, you relax because it's very high energy, very competitive. You know, there's no tapping in this game. You got to swing hard. It's not SCA, but it's pretty intense. It's called Belagarth. Like I said, I've been doing it for a long time. Always stayed away from a full LARP. Part of it was I was nervous. I mean, I can sit at a table and figure out rules. But if I go to a LARP and I hear, you know, fire damage, ice, light, am I going to just stand there and analysis paralysis and be like, I think I'm dead, or am I? I don't know. I have this resistance, I think, and I have that. I said, you know what? I'm going to go see what it's like. So I showed up Saturday morning because I was going to help a friend move, but then something changed Friday. That's a whole different story. So get up there Saturday morning, 10 a.m. As soon as I start setting up my tent, you know, multiple people come up. Hey, who are you? How are you? Can we help? I'm so-and-so. And I'm like, okay, I'm good. I've scouted for years. I know how this tent works. So not a big deal, but everybody was just like so excited to see a new person. And it was really nice to feel welcomed and not like, you know, some of us that do role-playing can be a touch social anxiety and a touch kind of like, there's a new person. What do we do? But there were, everybody there was like, hey, come on over, meet this person, meet that person. So when I go over, sit down with, they call them staff, but to me, I call them storytellers because it makes it easier in my head. They helped me build a character, which was simple as, what skills do you want? Oh, I kind of like to block things with a shield, and oh, I can take pick locks? Sure, I'll take that. Like, why not? So build a character. We started role-playing roughly 11 a.m. And they walked us around different scenarios, and you could kind of choose where you wanted to go. They had a very in-depth storyline and different worlds you could travel to on a boat. But as long as you had a coin, otherwise you had to go earn a coin to pay the boatman. And then you could go do different things. I went to bed. Keep in mind, we started at 11 a.m. I went to bed at 1:30 a.m. I was like, I am exhausted. And some people are like, but we just beat the kobolds and we resurrected Buck. We got to go do this now. I'm like, no. 49-year-old guy.
That sounds like a you problem.
Yeah, I was like, I've walked probably 10 miles today in up and down sand hills, and I am exhausted. I'm going to go throw my CPAP on and crash. I did, and when I woke up at, I think, 3 in the morning to go to the bathroom, two people were still out there doing stuff. Now, keep in mind, the storytellers went to bed. These two are just talking in character, and they were super involved with the story. I really enjoyed that part. I really enjoyed that, yeah, there was a lot of rules, but there was always, again, they call it staff. Storytellers easier for me. Staff right near all of us where I could be like, what is crush? Oh, it goes through even if you block it. But I got that thing on my shield, right? You're good. Keep going. Like, I didn't have to pause what was going on. They would kind of fill you in on, oh, yeah, you're good. You're good. And even if you missed something, they didn't really care.
Right.
They weren't like, you ruined the scene. Like, they didn't care. One of the staff got there late, so he was super excited because we decided to go to the world he created, which to me was kind of an African savanna kind of setting. And his main NPC was thrown in an asylum for being crazy, for talking about how, well, animals are getting intelligent and they can talk to you. And meanwhile, he's talking with one of the other players, and I'm like, I look at one of the storytellers, I'm going to pick the lock. He's like, feel free. So I'm like, miming that, open the door. I'm like, all right, let's go. And his eyes lit up. He's like, wait, you guys are freeing me? And then he did, you know, put his hand on his head. He goes, all right, as a storyteller, I wasn't expecting you guys to free me. I'm like, well, the door's open. Let's go.
Yeah.
So now he had to go to the other storytellers and be like, okay, so they're freeing me. So the combat that was going to happen over here is now going to have to be a stealth mission. And then we had to use our skills to stealth out. It was really, I had a ton of fun. Like, I came back and sat down with my wife. I mean, Michael, you've met her. Mm-hmm. She's not the biggest role player. And I was like, you've got to come do this with me. And she's like, well, I go, you can play a healer. You don't have to be involved in all the combat. You can heal. And she's like, well, how's it work? I go, you count to 30 and you touch somebody, I go, you heal 4. Like, that's it. I go, that's the only healing I saw.
Yeah.
I didn't pay attention to the rest of the stuff she was doing. I know they resurrected somebody and some other stuff. I don't remember. I don't know how it worked. Other than the ritual took 30 minutes in real time, and they had to spend spell components, which were literally pieces of paper with the spell components written on it. Mm. It's not like we had to go in the woods and collect 8 pine cones. Right. And, you know, it's, you had to earn them in game and spend them. So they've developed a good system for magic. The economy was easy. Like I said, little gold coins, you could pay the boatman to go places, or you could spend them on other things. It's kind of and even in character, you can spend them with each other. They had very strict rules on separating player conflict and character conflict. They said there's no arguing between players. So you and I couldn't argue, Michael, but our characters can yell at each other and call each other things. And I said, okay, what's your check-in process? He goes, I was just about to get that. Every 5 to 10 minutes, you have to hold your hand up and go, we good? And the other person has to say, yep. And then we can go right back into whatever we were yelling at each other about. Mm. So I was like, That's awesome that you guys built that in. So that way people don't have that character bleed. And it was a lot of fun. Like I said, I really enjoyed it. I've got a few people I work with that are like, "You did what?" And I'm like, "No, you gotta try it." And they're like, I don't know about this." And I'm like, "All right, I'll be quiet. I know you're not into the nerdy stuff like I am, but
You're not qualified. Thanks for trying.
That's right.
yeah, it was I wish I'd done something like this earlier because A, it got me out of my comfort zone. B, there was enough of swinging these foam weapons that it filled my desire to get back on that kind of the fighting thing, but it wasn't as intense as what I'm used to because it's hit points. So it's just a different strategy. So I could hit you 20 times. You could be like, "Dude, you're only doing 1 point of damage. Good luck. You're gonna be here all night." I'd be like, "Oh, all right, let me figure out a way to get around this." So that was kind of nice. Really, I don't know, what really brought me in was just how friendly everybody was, in character and out of character. Because in their storyline, everybody's been pulled from their worlds and they're now stuck in this Hammerton or Hammerfell. I couldn't remember because I kept screwing it up in character because I thought it was funny to say the name wrong. And now I can't remember the name of the actual town. So
That's
everybody is
committing to the
trying
bit right there.
to.
Yeah. Method acting.
That's right.
But every character is trying to find a way home. And you talk about your backstory, and the storytellers listen to it, and they start weaving it into the story too. So one of the scenes I did with a couple of the other guys actually tied in their background. And they were like, "So what? That's our people from our world were here." And they were trying to figure out how it worked. And in character, I'm like, "All right, well, I don't have a clue any of this stuff. So talk me through all the clues you've got." And as they were telling me, "Well, we've got this and that." And I'm like, "Well, what about this?" And at one point, they both looked at each other and went, "Oh my God, we never put those two things together. You're right. Let's go." Which led us to a whole nother scene, which the storyteller looked at me and smiled and goes, "I'm finally glad somebody helped them put that together." Because that happened a while ago and they never caught that. We thought it was too vague. I'm like, you just needed the outside guy to ask a lot of
I
questions
mean,
and.
sometimes it is that, new eyes see fresh sort of thing, or fresh eyes see new, whatever that saying is.
Yeah, I think it's both, actually. I've probably heard them both, heard it both
I
ways.
heard
I
it both
mean,
ways.
like I'm notorious for like totally missing a puzzle in a tabletop. Like I could be at it for days, never figure it out. Yet other people can be at a puzzle for days. I walk into that and I'm like, what did you try? They do this. I'm like, well, then did you try that? And like all of a sudden I'm the like puzzle genius or something, which anybody who knows me knows is absolutely not true. I'm really not that good at puzzles, but something about knowing what has been tried and failed and not being the one who tried and failed at it
You're
gives
not
you
like,
the ability
oh,
to get it correct.
you're not emotionally connected to the effort, and you can just like come in clean. I have this weird, I'm a very intuitive person when it comes to puzzles. Like before we got really hardcore into this stuff, or I did, we would do like game nights with our friends, but it was more like we play like Taboo and Scattergories and Scrabble. But there was one game, I think it's, oh, what is it called? It's like a trivia game, but it's like a bunch of different versions. Like you have like a Cloodle, yellow is like word puzzles, red is like green is like charades, blue is like, I don't know, there's a word, people yelling that. Anyway, yellow is like the puzzly one, and it became very apparent very early that when they read the puzzle I would instantly know it or I would never figure it out. Like it was as soon as it was read, I either like I understand it and here it is, or I could have sat there for eternity and it just never would have got there. So it's just the instant one way or the other. It's like, okay, I got it, or just we can pass because it's not going to happen, sort of a thing.
It was, like I said, it was nice to get out of my comfort zone. When I got home, I started reading the rule book. I mean, there's 170 some pages to this book, but a lot of it is skill descriptions and breaking down how to build a character. The other thing that I really appreciated is in the rules is written, if you're wearing a white sash or at night a glow stick, you are a character that cannot be physically attacked. So let's say you were wearing that white sash, I could be playing an NPC and I would just get within X number of feet of you and count to like five and be like, "You've fallen, And then you would go, I've taken enough damage. So that way it can include people who can't physically do a lot of the combat or just don't want to get hit by foam weapons.
Yeah.
I mean, they're light, so it doesn't really hurt. But again, I've been doing it 28 years, so right. I'm probably a little desensitized to it. So, but the fact they took the time to write that into the rules, I really appreciated. Especially since, you know, I'm 49, you know, if I want to do this for another 20 years, there'll be a time where that white sash will be glowing time because I won't want to do all that. So I guess, long story short, if you ever want to try it, go out and do it. Get out of your comfort zone. Don't be the old guy that just sits at home and stares at dumb movies.
Because I've had that same thing where, again, I've been into this nerdery since I was literally 10, 12 years old, but I've never done an actual LARP. I run that game at a Catacon every year that's kind of like a LARP. It's got LARP-ish qualities to it, but I've never actually went to a LARP. So I would probably want to do it, but I would need a guide. I need somebody to be my person that takes me into the cult. I don't want to just, you know, walk in on my own.
I had a friend that was already doing it, so I kind of jumped on his character as a new sidekick, so to speak, and tagged along with him for a bit till I kind of got into it a little bit. I mean, I don't want to use the word impressed, but I guess more surprised at the level of some of the role playing they were going into. Like in game, one of the characters actually died, and the other character ran across the field just screaming no, because this was like his brother, and like they like we literally had to pull him off of him as he's just having this little
moment,
not tantrum, but yeah, this moment. And then, you know, we had to go through the resurrection ceremony where he just paced for half an hour and was just like super worried. And every now and then he would hold a thumb up, you know, I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
RJ's so, good. Captain Abraham's pissed.
No doubt. So I have a lot of LARP experience, like a crazy amount of LARP experience. In fact, that's how I met Josh, was at a LARP. So basically, I was playing D&D. I had just moved to a new town, moved up to Maine. It was before I even got a chance to start college there. So, I had been in the town for about a year, hadn't made a ton of friends, hadn't really get in gaming groups. I actually drove back to Connecticut from Portland, Maine, about once or twice a month on weekends. One weekend a month was for my National Guard stuff. The other one was to just game with Glenn and all my other friends that gamed down here in Connecticut. So about a year in, I met this guard, security guard at the mall I worked at, and found out he was a gamer. I think somebody said made some crazy gaming reference that he picked up on. I'm like, we are one.
Yep.
And we got to talking, you know how those meets go, meet cutes. And I was hanging at his house one day, and he got a call and a big invite to one of the local big time GMs. And so all of a sudden, he couldn't go to that game. So I got in on that game, and I was playing for about 6-7 months. And I realized that they did LARPing at the game store I was at. And I got the invite to go there. Now, the person who owned the store had seen me role-playing for a while, and he's like, I got a perfect character for you. So I got this character that was deeply involved in the story and the whole bit. And I'm like, I've never played Vampire. I've never LARPed. I don't even know what I'm doing. They're like, you're playing the biggest bad guy in the entire town. Like, everybody's terrified of you. They're scared of you. And you rule with an iron fist because the people around you are beasts. Like, literally. I'm an evil vampire with a black spiral dance, a werewolf as a bodyguard, and a Bruja anti-tribute as my other bodyguard. My seneschal is a Zamisi, one of these really cruel, nasty people that do flesh molding and all kinds of crazy, scary, frightening stuff. And the person who actually played that role was that GM, and his ability to describe terrifying stuff put me on notice, right? You know, there are moments where I'm like, okay, chill, you know, kind of thing. So like, I was like, I can't go wrong, right? This is going to be cool. And I remember my very first scene, I literally put on this, this big black, overcoat. It was actually my military overcoat from my class A uniform, because I was still in the military at the time. And, our group met downstairs in the basement of the game store. So I'm at the top of the stairs, about to head down. There are people coming up. There's a big light behind me. I'm 5'3". I'm not a big and imposing person. But at the top of the stairs where the light as I descend the stairs, is blocked by me and casts this shadow down the stairs, and I'm playing a vampire who masters shadows. Meanwhile, all those big bodyguard types are coming down the stairs behind me. People were walking up the stairs, and a couple of them were like, what the heck? And I don't even know these people. I literally walk, and as I'm walking down the stairs, I just flared my coat, and it literally looked like I made the room go dark as I went down the stairs. And I was hooked. That was it. I said nothing. I did nothing but walk down the stairs, and I was in. So for years, I LARPed huge groups. Like, it was the college thing at University of Southern Maine. After a short while, after about a year or so, I started running my own game. I ran a LARP that had 8 or 9 storytellers on average, somewhere between 60 and 80 people would show up at an event. Often I had over 100 people in the game, but on any given, I think the most we ever got was like 85 one particular night. And I was in several LARPs that were almost twice that size. Mm-hmm. And like literally our group LARPed 4 weekends a month. Every Saturday there was a LARP that you could go to. I was in almost all of them at any given point. We actually formed an LLC. I was an executive officer for that, helped write the charter, the whole bit, so that we could fund our endeavors, because we had to pay the school for that stuff. So we'd collect so we could cover the costs. And then basically the staff got breakfast at Denny's and we could cover the cost of ink and paper.
Right.
But it was an amazing, like, almost 8-9 years of my life.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I'm certainly intrigued enough and I think adventure enough to try it. But we will have to see. Brodabush says that his son was hooked when they went to Origins this year, and he went to battle every day. I'm guessing this was like the foam battles. I've seen some of those set up at like Gen Con and Origins. That's one thing we've never really had at a Catacomb, to kind of twist it to that quickly. In one of our early years, we had someone who did a LARP in Dayton and wanted to set up like a booth to like try to like, you know, recruit people. And we said yes, and then it just fell through. And then we've never really circled back to that. But that's one thing that just, it's a gap in my nerdery, that all the things I've done never LARPed. So I guess that needs to go on the bucket list.
Yeah, my family puts on a big barbecue once a year. It's actually coming up, not this weekend, but the following weekend. And last year we had several of my friends who were in my virtual tabletop game, came down and brought in all their buffer weapons and such like that, and basically hung out, did demonstrations for the middle kids. Like, we have a bounce house for the young kids, and we have all kinds of sports activities, but for those who are not really into that, we wanted to have something for everybody. So we're not going to break out the dice and do a full game at the barbecue, but having a bunch of foam weapons so kids can practice and play, and having several people, one who's a big storyteller, one of the local LARPs there, others who are very active in it, showing folks how to do it, was awesome. It's really good. I'm hoping we get them back. It has not been locked in like as early as it was last year, but several of those same people are coming, so I'm confident we're going to have the stuff there. But it just didn't make the marquee this year, but it'll be there.
All right, very cool. All right, Chris, anything else you want to share?
No, I think I've taken up enough of our time. What have you been up to?
Again, just for the sake of brevity, I'll just mention 2 or 3 things really quickly. TV-wise, have not yet watched Umbrella Academy season 4. My wife and I have watched all of the 3 earlier seasons, so I've kind of waited for time for us to watch them together. So that's kind of holding us up. Though we have watched the first 2 episodes of Only Murders in the Building, and that show continues to be an absolute delight. I love that show. So if that's something you've not been watching, I highly encourage you to watch. It's on season 4. I've loved all the first 3 seasons, and season 4, first 2 episodes. Again, I watch it with a smile on my face. I love spending time with these characters. Highly, highly recommend it. So I'm teaching games at school now. I know I've mentioned that a couple times and on some of my socials. So I work at a school, not a teacher, but I work at a school as support staff. And they all know that I'm a big gamer and that I do a lot of this stuff. So last year I would do like one-off like fun times, like the kids got a reward, they might have me come in and just play games with them for a while, or sometimes it was just honestly give teachers a break, right? But this year they have set up a schedule with me and some of the other support staff, some of them who are actual teachers, and basically we rotate. So for a full week, I'm in a particular class. I work in a Montessori school, so we have K through 12. But their advice is like K and 1, 2 and 3, 4 and 5, 6 and 7, 8 and 9, and then high school 10 through 12. So I was in 4 and 5 for the first week. I'm in 5 and or 6 and 7 this week. And I just play games with them for an hour. So I'm teaching them new games. We're playing old games, that type of thing. So I tried code names with both groups. And I was a little bit surprised that they struggled with that game. And, you know, again, I'm an old man, but if you've never played Code Names, it's a word game. It's a pattern game. You're trying to find connections. Like, how can I say one word like, you know, peppermint and get you to know which three words I think connect to peppermint so that we can get them guessed correctly. And they would be like peppermint one, storage one. You know, everything was just one. Like they were not able to like conceptualize these patterns. And I thought, well, maybe it was just the age group. You know, the first age group kids, they were pretty young. But I tried it with the older kids and same thing. I'm gonna try it with every class because I think it's a great game for this environment. And I'm also been telling the teachers, like, you can play this game with like lesson plans. Like if you're doing a space science lesson, you could just take 25 words from space, like black hole and moon and orbit, and make your own game. You don't have to use the actual one. So I want to do it with all the classes, but I've been a little surprised at how they have struggled. So again, I don't feel like I'm being mean. It's something that I've noticed. And then today, because I'm in the biggest class, there's 19 kids. It's our largest class in the school. It's hard to run games for that many people. You know, you play party games, and even then it's a little bit wonky. So we did four different tables. We're playing Love Letter. One table was playing Cabo and one table was playing Mantis. And I was just kind of like circling the room. But even then, there was like so many questions. Again, I'm not a teacher. I've never been trained to do this, even though we say we're in an academy here. So it's been a learning lesson for me. I'm having fun. The kids seem to be enjoying it. So it's nothing but a positive. But I am kind of seeing in action how some of this stuff happens. And it's kind of interesting. Both of my kids are supposed to run games at a Catacomb this year. Last year was the first year they came with me, and John ran an RPG, and from all accounts, it went very well. But he's been running games for a while for his friends. He runs like three different campaigns. He plays in campaigns. Like he's into this hardcore. His brother, who's 1 year younger, has played in most of these. He's usually in the same games his brother runs, but he's just basically been a player. But he wanted to run an RPG this year, and so he's been working on it, and we wanted to do like a play test. So Sunday, we had some friends over. I ran the game that I'm running for them, The Lost Mines of Phandelver, and then after that, we re-rolled just like second-level characters and jumped in, and it was terrible, okay? we were nice about it, but the reason I bring this up is, as someone who's done this a long time, and I often give the advice that I can go into a game with very little prep. I can just take what the players give me. I can roll with it, and I can fill 2-3 hours and make it like amazing. Like most people probably won't know I'm just making stuff up. I can do that, but that is a learned skill. So he tried to do that as a very novice GM. Like at this point, I think he's ran 2 sessions prior, and those were from a module. I think he ran like the Pathfinder starter set, right? So he has almost no experience running, and he was just trying to make it work. And on top of it, he wants to run a scary haunted house style game because it's going to be November, right around Halloween. And it's difficult to run a scary game in D&D anyways because it's not really designed for that. There's not enough power balance. And like 20 minutes in, I'm like, time out. This is not working. You are not ready for this. So like, I'm not trying to be mean, but this is not going to help you, because you're not far enough along in the process for this to be valuable information. So we're just going to stop it here. And we're going to have to like go back to zero, start all over. And the only reason I bring this up is to say, if you are a newer GM, you have probably heard people like me say, hey, you can just wing things. Maybe not. Not everyone can. And certainly if you're new, don't be afraid to lean into a module and run it by the book. Even if you're reading boxed text from the book, yes, that's not what we want to do, but everybody has to start somewhere. And it's okay if that's where you're starting. So don't feel bad that you can't do that, or don't try to do it if you don't feel comfortable, because it is a learned skill and not everyone has it.
I will actually double down on that, yep. Michael. When I went to a Catacomb last year and I ran Star Trek Adventures.
Yep.
The Star Trek Adventures module that I ran came from their starter box set, the mm-hmm. first edition box set. I had been running Star Trek Adventure. I'm sorry, that actually came, was the starter mission from the core rules. I had been running it for our show prior to, but I had never run to unknown people mm-hmm. before, right? So that was my first time doing it. I have since run a couple different things, but my first two times running for strangers, Star Trek Adventures, even the first time I ran for our on-air cast, the very first thing we did, our pilot episode, was a moderate change up of the starter adventure. And I ran the mission at Xerxes from the first edition book four times before I ever started running my own material. And I've been GMing for over 35 some odd years.
Yep.
So I think what you just said there was priceless advice. And so I personally, whenever I'm running a new game, will always run the starter adventure or the quick start adventure multiple times before I box set adventure before I do another thing, just to really get a flow for what goes and get a sense from strangers the types of questions I'll get asked, so then I have the ability to improv from there.
Yeah, and you know, I play a lot of different games, I've ran a lot of different games, I have a lot of experience with them. I don't think I would try to run a haunted house game in D&D. like, I don't think that the game is designed very well for that. I think I could make it work. I think I could have, my players would have fun, but it's not ideal. But he has not had that same experience. Like, I don't think we played Pathfinder at conventions, and he's played D&D at home, but he's never played like Monster of the Week. He's never played any of those Kids on Bikes. So I think if he really wants to run a haunted house adventure, we need to get him a different game. So that he could, Broda Bush mentioned Ravenloft. Yeah, that was one person who mentioned in Discord that there's the Death House adventure that I think that kicks off Ravenloft would be an ideal adventure. But again, he didn't want to do that. He wanted to do his own thing. So we are working through that process and what he's actually going to run. And I'm probably going to just ask him, will you run board games this year? And then let's work on that, because we don't have that much time between now and then. Yep. But we'll see. And then the last thing, of course, a Catacon. It's coming up. It's like 68 days away. We just sold our 200th badge today. So we're one third of where I want to be by the time we get there. Again, it's not apples to apples because we didn't do a Kickstarter this year. And when we started selling badges versus last year, it's not exactly the same. But last year we sold 150 badges over the weekend. So from Friday to Sunday, people just showing up, buying badges. Sometimes that's like the $5 after five thing, but roughly we had about 150 people. So if that math holds, we need another 150 people to buy badges between now and November, which I think is doable. Like, I feel like mm-hmm. we're on pace. We just started our Facebook ad like a week ago, and we're going to do a targeted ad to the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. We're going to offer a discount code just for the servicemen and women and their families and friends. We've never done that before, but they have a very reasonable package that we've been working on it. Kaylee's been doing some amazing work with some of our images. And I really think we're going to have a lot of luck there. So I'm still very confident at this point that we're going to hit those numbers, and it's going to be a very successful year. But for the interest of time, we will end things there, and we will move into 10 things. That is our first improv game. And that's where we're going to take turns prompting each other to try to come up with a list of 10 things. And it could be like 10 things you might find in a orc's pocket, 10 things you might buy for your girlfriend at Christmas, those types of things. And then our job is to come up with 10 things that make sense as quickly as possible. Immediacy is better than accuracy, so a list compiled quickly is actually better in terms of how the game works than a list that actually makes a whole hell of a lot of sense. Lee Winika, again, you're the guest co-host tonight, so would you like to go first in terms of prompting Chris or I, or would you like to go first in being prompted to give your list?
I think I'm going to go first in prompting, and I'm going to prompt Chris.
All right.
Chris, what are 10 things your next LARP character must have?
Ooh, must have. Okay. A little thing to carry my skills around in.
What?
A stopwatch.
Dude.
Because they do a lot of stuff with timing. New garb.
Three.
Better looking weapons. Because mine just look like big socks on a stick. A hat.
Five.
better shoes.
Six.
I want to bring food with me because I get hungry. That's good questions. Only done it once. So more little objects to represent, like picking locks and stuff. I want to make something to actually represent that. I think that'd be kind of neat.
Eight.
A wooden horse so I can pretend like I'm riding a horse.
Nine.
And then somebody behind me with coconuts.
Ten.
So it sounds like a horse.
If you had not said coconuts, I would have been cross with you. That was awesome. Thank you.
All right. That is, in fact, a list of 10 things. So if I got the order correct, you will prompt me, and then I will finish off by prompting Lumenica. So, Chris, what would you like my list to be, sir?
All right. Give me 10 things that we could find in your pocket.
Lint.
One.
Bubblegum wrapper.
Two.
Used bubblegum.
Three.
Money. Yeah, right.
Four.
Cotton candy.
Five.
Credit card.
Six.
A catacomb memorabilia.
Seven.
Poker chips.
Eight.
Buttons.
Nine.
Lint. I think I started with lint.
Ten.
I have two lints. Yay. All right. So Liwanika. Talked about a lot of stuff, a lot of LARPing stuff. I'll make it simple. 10 RPGs that you have not played that you hope to play in the future.
John Carter of Mars.
One.
Conan.
Two.
Two.
Everyday Heroes.
Three.
Three.
Though I've run it, I have not played it. Tales of the Valiant.
Four.
Again, I run it, haven't played. DC 20. It's not out yet.
Five.
Draw Steel, again, not out yet, but six. I'm interested.
Six.
Kashmir. Seven. Just built a character. I'm looking forward to the beta test. I'm actually in a beta test group, so
nice.
I'm excited. That game with the candles, and I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head.
Ten candles.
That intrigues the hell out of me. Frightens me a bit, but intrigues the hell out of me. Hunter, the latest, newest version.
Nine.
And I actually played it twice now, so that I can't say I can't say We Can Be Heroes, but that's such a great game. I gotta play that again. Something I haven't played yet that I want to play. Pathfinder. I have not played a Pathfinder game yet.
10. Ooh, that is, in fact, a list of 10 things. All right. So that brings us into used books. And that's basically why we wanted Liwanika specifically to talk about this tonight. Again, he's been running Star Trek Adventures for a while. A new second edition has recently come out. And Star Trek Adventures is part of Modiphius's game system. They have a bunch of IPs that use the 2D20 system. So, Chris, I wanted to start with you. Are you familiar with this system? Have you played it before? Do you have any thoughts on 2D20 systems as a whole?
I've played Conan.
Okay.
A couple times. I like rolling two dice because it gives you more chance to get the number. It just took me a little while to remember how the dice worked because it wasn't just as easy as, you know, D20, add this. You had to. It's been a while since I've played it. I think it's a roll under.
Yep. You add this and then roll under that.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it was interesting to try to think about rolling under and not having a target number, so to speak. The Conan system I liked because it was more low magic, more story driven is how I kind of looked at it. And that might just be the game we were playing too. It was really, really nice. I haven't played the Star Trek one. I've played other Star Trek role playing games, but not this one. So I'm curious to hear how it plays and kind of compare it to the other Star Trek game.
Before we turn to Liwanika, I will mention I've ran the first edition Star Trek Adventure starter set adventure. I ran it one time and I was kind of reading as I went, so it was not my best work, but because I'm a big Star Trek fan. I grew up watching Star Trek. I love Star Trek. Strange New Worlds, if you're not watching it, it's like some of the best Trek in forever. I played Fallout at our last faculty retreat. I did not care for it. I don't think this had anything to do with the person running it. Don't think it had anything to do with the people I was playing with. That was fun, but I did not like the system for that one. It just did not work for me. But then I played Actun Cthulhu, which is basically the Hellboy. It was described to me as if it was like Indiana Jones, but it felt more like Hellboy to me because it's not just Nazis like trying to find supernatural weapons. They have actually found them, and there's like, you know, actual supernatural stuff happening. But that was the most fun I've ever had with a 2D20 system. So it kind of changed me into thinking that it was a system I would enjoy a little bit more exposure. So I did buy that box set, starter set of the Actun Cthulhu, which I hope to run at some point. And then I will say that Modiphius lost the Conan license. So there was a Humble Bundle. I have every single PDF of everything that they had ever made for that. So I have it. If anybody wants to, you know, run it, I can loan it to you. But Lee Winika, you are the expert. You run this a lot. It's one of the patron games that you run for the folks that support Tabletop Journeys. I know you've ran it at other conventions, so you are very versed. So my specific kind of what I wanted to talk to you about is they just came out with a second edition, which feels honestly kind of quick. Like, I feel like they went to second edition pretty quick. So I'm curious, what did they change? And do you feel like this was necessary? Is it an improvement? How and why? You have the floor, sir.
So I'm going to be exceptionally brief.
Sorry. You're serious. Okay. Just kidding.
Yeah. I believe, and Josh has not hit his grave yet, but I probably just sent him there with that comment.
Yeah.
But so with a little bit of context, I came up playing FASA. I followed that by playing Last Unicorn Games. Love Last Unicorn Games. Played it for a lot of years. I played a little bit of Decipher and have almost all of Last Unicorn Games and much of the Decipher stuff on my bookshelf over yonder. So, Chris, I have a lot of that lead-up experience. As far as really quick for second edition, if you weren't in the STA community for a while, one of the things you may not be aware of, this game came out 2 years before the pandemic. It's actually in its eighth year.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Time of second edition launch.
It felt like it was like 4 years, maybe.
Yeah, so I started playing. I became aware of this version of the game 3 years ago this month, or last month. And I bought all the stuff in a Humble Bundle to get started, to figure it all out. And then I started buying the physical books and I started watching all the YouTubes and joining all the Facebook groups. And there's a bunch of them, and talking with a lot of the creators, because the community for Star Trek Adventures, the line editor, Jim Johnson, let me phrase that. We're on air, so you have to say his name properly. Jim Johnson. and many of his lead writers are avid followers. Some of them are even administrators in some of the Facebook groups, but they follow daily. If you post a question about that game, I can almost guarantee you one of the comments you're going to have is going to be from at least two of the writers on these books, and probably Jim Johnson as well. And often the actual 2D20 system designer, Nate Dowdell, he's on all of those groups as well, and he will even respond to questions about the system. So I was learning from the creative team as well as the community all along. So 6 months of that, start running it for the show, and that's the brief context of the game. So I have a lot of experience running. Josh and I combined to GM our live play, actual play. I run a monthly Patreon game, and I run at conventions as often as I can get to conventions. And there was one weekend where I did something like four different STA games, or three different STA games in one weekend, in addition to all the other games I ran. So I do have a fair amount of experience with it. And the need for second edition really stems from the need to polish the rules, not change them, but polish the rules in a way that can help onboard new players without as much of the community support. I mean, the community support is great, but I know for me, the first 6 month struggle was understanding how it fit. I had a really strong sense that it would fit, but I had a really difficult time figuring that out. Just the order of operations within the core rule books made it difficult. I've often said on air, buy the player's guide, buy the GM's guide, and use the starter set. Don't use the core book for the rules. Use those other tools for the rules, and just use the core rule book as a reference guide for the NPCs and the other characters and the ships and the things like that. And you will be infinite. You'll find the game easier to run and even play as a player. Utilize some of the great free online tools that are available. The BC Holmes tool, which is online for generating a character. That if you do three or four characters in that, you will understand character generation far better than the core rule book shows that, not because the information's not there, just the way it's laid out is okay. harder to grasp. And as an ADHD person who uses e-readers to really grasp large volumes of complex written information, I think that was a part of the problem. So I don't have the core rule book handy, but I did literally just get the physical book sent to me this evening. I'm trying to do this without glare, but I got this yesterday afternoon, and I actually did my unboxing video minutes before signing into this broadcast. Nice. So I literally did not open the physical copy until just before we started tonight, but I've had the PDF for about a month and a half while it was shipping. So, but what I can tell you is they put a lot of effort into making it more accessible. They put the right things in the right order. They have flowcharts. That are beautiful and clean. It's not, you don't have that TNG L cars, which is beautiful to look at, terrible to read and comprehend from. So this is black lettering on a white page with various headers that are in the appropriate colors to call out the right topics. The things that are emboldened are there to call out the right things. So for me, I was reading this and I picked up on the concepts they wanted to me, honestly, without even needing the e-reader, my first pass. And you'll see that in the free quick start that's on DriveThruRPG as well. So, I mean, it's just one of those things. They needed to clean that up so more people could play the game. Additionally, there were some hinky bits that would slow down gameplay, specifically as relating to conflict or combat scenarios and ship combat. So one of the things they did is they eliminated the six-sided challenge dice, which was a six-sider that had special characters on it. We're not talking like the Star Wars game kind of special dice, but it was special dice nonetheless, right? And there's people in the TTRPG community that hate special dice. They think it's a money grab. They don't think it has any merit. To them, I say, you're flat wrong. Sometimes a game just wants to do something different, and it is not specifically a money grab. Not everybody is that way. You don't have to approach the world believing everybody's evil. Every now and then, give somebody the benefit of the doubt. But it was slowing the game down. So they eliminated that, rechanged some of the rules to make the things that were impacted by challenge dice easier. So that's your biggest change in the game. The other things were really quality of life differences with characters. You now, as opposed to having to use one of your very limited talents, or similar if you play D&D, feats, to prove you're a species. So for instance, Klingons have a specific talent in first edition. If you wanted to play a Klingon character, one of your four talents would have to be that one to have that. You play a Klingon without it, but then are you really a Klingon? You know, if you want to play a Betazoid, you who really have two different abilities, that's two of your four talents. And so there were some balance things that needed to be handled. In second edition, they leaned on traits. So if you're playing a given species, your species has traits and your species has a species ability, which is basically that old exclusive talent is now part of just being that species.
Okay.
Everybody has one. Humans used to not have one. Now humans have one. And so they did that, which frees up a talent for other folks. In addition to that, if you want to play Star Trek like a Star Trek show, everybody has this weird hobby. You know, Julian and O'Brien were big on adventure sports. Like they did all the whitewater rafting, all those crazy types of things, right? If you wanted to portray that in a Star Trek adventures game, you had to take one of your limited focuses to do that. Now, you might have six or seven focuses, but you are giving up one of those critical to nearly every game situation, potentially, kind of situations in favor of this one limited thing that really shows up every couple of episodes for 5 or 10 minutes. So they created Pastimes, which is a focus for just that. So that's a quality of life thing. It's like they gave you that ability, freeing up another ability so that you can better portray the types of characters we see on the shows.
Okay.
And really, most of the changes are right along those lines. Like, how do we better emulate these shows? Chris, you mentioned the narrative feel less magical for Conan. Mm-hmm. I have played Star Trek, I played Fallout, and I have played Cohors Cthulhu and Sentience 2D20. And one of the things that I've noticed is, and I will state this across the board, 2D20 is a much more narratively focused game system. And because of that, it allows for better flow at the table. It gives the GM the opportunity to create more on the fly, do more things, allow more things. There's a lot less no you can't and a lot more how do you do that when this game, and it's hard-coded into the game system, and it's designed for that. The meta currency of threat and momentum, or doom and momentum, depending on which 2D20 game you play, in Star Trek it's threat and momentum, is really designed around giving players and GMs that give and take to impact the story. And I think it's wonderful. It's really freed my mind as to how I can GM in different ways, even for other systems. Like, without even using that mechanic, I just think of other ways to do things. And most importantly, those two mechanics, and I think it's even better done now that we've eliminated challenge dice and removed some of the things that threat momentum had to be spent on.
Okay.
So they're better focused in their various areas. With 2D20, it is the fact that as a GM in any game system, I always have the ability to make things more challenging. Party's fighting four bad guys, they're breezing through it. I really wanted this to be a harder fight. If I want there to be two more bad guys, I can always do that.
Yep.
I have always been able to do that. And yes, you can do that in Star Trek 2. The challenges, especially when you're playing with strangers at a convention, the moment you do that and it's recognized that that wasn't planned, you're running a module, you do that, and they know for a fact that module didn't come with four more guys, right? Now you're adversarial whether you want it to be or not. You know you're doing it to make this more enjoyable and challenging for the players, because at the end of the day, if they breeze through every conflict, every scene, they're going to say, yeah, it was okay, but, you know, I was never worried, right? They walk away, ho-hum. But even if they know, even if that's going to happen in that moment, there's a feel bad at the table. The beauty of having meta currencies where I now spend one or two momentum, one momentum for every low level NPC that or adversary that comes in, two for every bigger one, three for the big bad, an additional big bad. When they see me spend that currency, and by the way, effectively currency they gave to me through choice or bad role, now I'm just playing the game with them.
Right.
That feel bad is automatically eliminated, and it's just how we play the game. Nobody really or often gets mad if you land on Boardwalk and have to pay, you know, pay for that property because they had Park Place and both have hotels. Nobody gets mad at that because that's the game. They get mad if all of a sudden they land there and you're like, well, I'm the GM, I just put a hotel there.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the mechanics here because they take that away, and second edition really, really gets into that more.
Okay. So I have a couple things I want to mention, and I want to give Chris, obviously, a chance to ask some questions as well. So again, I love Star Trek. Grew up watching the original series, watched all of Next Generation. I miss Deep Space Nine. I don't know. I know people talking about it might be the best Trek, but it just missed me. But I am loving Strange New Worlds. I've enjoyed Lower Decks. So I'm not the most hardcore Trek fan in the world, but I do enjoy it. I feel like I know it pretty well. It is generally not an action-adventure series. You know, it's more of a drama series. So how do you sustain an RPG where realistically the interpersonal conflict might be the height of drama in a given episode? And then my other question is, usually when there is action adventure, it's ship-to-ship combat. So how does the game handle that, where everyone gets something to do if that's possible? Because that's where I see most of the action adventure being, is it's when a Klingon warbird is facing off against the Enterprise. That's the tension, not necessarily laser fire or phaser fire.
So So I'm going to focus on second edition more here.
Sure. Yes, please.
In the interest of brevity, but you bring up an interesting point. So one of the things about Star Trek is it's designed to emulate series that you see and the movies that you see. So if you want something that's more like Wrath of Khan, you can. If you want something that's more like the motion picture, you can. If you want an episode that's like Best of Both Worlds, you can. If you want an episode like Inner Light, you can. If you want to create something of your own that's a mix of all of the above, you can. You want an episode like season two, episode one of Strange New Worlds with all a court case drama, or Measure of a Man from TNG, you can. Because the rules and the way the system is designed can let you bring in that flavor. And you can bring your various players into that however you want. If you want more shoot 'em ups, you can. The example I give is I actually ran for the actual play one of the most action-heavy episodes we've done in season out of our two seasons, where it was literally a one of the characters, one of the player characters, their daughter, NPC, is a prosecutor who's got to protect a witness and get them to the stand on this frontier colony, which happens to be the player character's homeworld. And all these bad guys are out to get him. It's basically like a mini version of Assault on Precinct 13 kind of situation, except they've got to get this person from the safe house to the courthouse. Meanwhile, I spent my threat, shut the lights and the power off in the building. They're stuck multiple floors up and the bad guys are assaulting and they've got to save this guy. So they're breaking for the roof. Bad guys are everywhere. They got to get out. I actually have other player characters in a shuttle somewhere else in town that are flying in a shuttle to get there. They're being shot at by rooftop emplacements of the bad guys, so they can't save the characters there. And I was able to do that through these rules exceptionally well, largely because of the way conflict work. It's got a very easy system for measuring distances. It is based on the scene, not like held to a specific standard. It's basically close, medium, and far distances. And if you're in a small space, like a small ship, close might be something you can touch, medium might be 5 to 10 feet, far is beyond that. But you could be in a much larger ship. Now close is anything between yourself and maybe 15 or 20 feet, medium is some distance after that, and far some other distance, or maybe it's based on levels. Anything on your level is close. Anything on the second level is medium. Anything on the third level is far. I've used all of those examples at one point or another. Because of that factor, it's easy to use the rules to create an exciting scene. The game system allows, when you're setting up your challenges, the acting player, like if it's Johnny's turn, Johnny's got a security officer who's going to fire a phaser. Johnny can definitely do that. He figures out what his target number is. I set the number of difficulties. He buys whatever extra dice he wants to be able to roll to roll. But as long as he gets one success, any other person can roll one die to help him reach his total number of successes. In a ship sequence, you're on board the ship. Johnny needs to be the person to fire the phasers. As long as he gets one success, any other person can do something to assist. So maybe the person playing the con officer, I'm going to pilot the ship in such a way that he gets the optimum firing solution. Right? So now that person gets to roll a dice. And because you're on a ship, if you have at least that one initial success, the ship actually can roll. So Johnny starts with a base 2 dice. He can buy up to 3 more dice, maximum of 5. He can, as long as one of those dice are successful, get 2 assists. So you could have a total of 7 dice rolling for the number of successes needed. Generally speaking, successes are 1 through 5. So it's one of those things where it can be very collaborative, and that's one of the ways you can get people involved. Mm-hmm. You know, engineer can be in engineering and say, I want to help them this time. I'm just going to make sure we get more power to the weapons or whatever. There are rules in ship combat for that also, but you could simply, as a GM, if you don't want to take the time to get into all of those rules, you could just narratively say that works. That's going to be a 3 difficulty, or you know, as long as he gets a success, you get to roll a die to help him. that type of thing. And so you can narratively bring everybody into every scene as I do things. You can create an opportunity. I one of the first fights that we had in the actual play was a firefight between some Romulans and the party. One of the players realized he does not have a good chance to fire a phaser. He did not have a character built for that. So what they did is, I want to create an opportunity. I'm going to shoot at the lights, causing it to strobe, which will distract the bad guys, making them easier to hit. So now he's not rolling against a character, a very difficult thing for them. He's just making a straight two difficulty challenge to make it easier for everybody else to fire. Mm-hmm. Now the non-conflict kind of character has added to that fight. That, by the way, is the only reason why they were actually able to successfully hit in that conflict. And then my engineer dropped his weapon shortly thereafter and just attacked everybody with the Zushan blades, as an Andorian is willing to want to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, but, so it really does allow for combat and conflict if you wish to bring it that way. We tend to run our shows closer to the non-conflict, but when we have it, it's poignant, it's hard-hitting, and it's fast. And I love the ability to manipulate that. Many game systems, you're one or the other. You cannot shift those gears well. And characters are built for one or the other. They don't have the ability to navigate both spheres.
Gotcha. Okay. Chris, I know you've been absorbing all that. Did you have any questions about the system or just anything for Lee Winnica?
How easy is it for somebody who's not a Star Trek fan to jump in and get immersed in the world?
I think fairly easy. If their only Star Trek knowledge is pop culture, I know Spock's a Vulcan and they don't have emotions. They can pretty much get it. Now, I will say, having a GM who knows a little bit more than that will always make that an easier hill to sled. But in general, I think it's fairly easy. It really depends on how deep or how canon you want with it. Michael Dismuke, one of the lead writers on several of the books, has often said, canon is what you choose to make at your table. You don't have to know all the show canon, all the alpha canon, and then have read 15, 20, 30 different books and know all the beta canon and go to all the websites and know all that. Yes, I have. But you don't have to know that to have fun playing this game. If you have very basics and you just sit down with somebody who's willing to go through the rules, plays the starter set or whatever, it kind of tells you what you need to know as you go. The basics of Klingons, most of them are aggressive and they're happy to fight. That's a good base to start with.
Right.
And then as long as somebody is also, while playing that game, showing the people who are newer to this the concept of Idic, just because that's how they are perceived does not mean every individual is that. As long as they keep it at kind of the focus of at least some of their episodes, they'll figure it out soon enough. One of our cast members, who's amazing, she has a lot of role playing experience, but is a casual Star Trek fan. It's the way she described it. She likes it, enjoys it, but she's a very casual Star Trek fan. Every now and then she'll ask us a question about a given race if we're talking about it or whatever. But beyond that, it's role playing. It's just, let me understand my character. She built her character from the ground up. We have that on recording. Lacey's amazing at this stuff. She's playing our ship's science officer. It doesn't hurt that she's actually a scientist in real life.
Right.
Our engineer is actually a civil engineer in real life. Yeah. Our former security officer, now XO, actually does cybersecurity in real life. So that's always cool. I'm surrounded by experts. You know how hard it is to make adventures for a group of experts in their fields, playing characters in their field? That's really difficult.
I'll share this quick story. So one of the first actual plays we ever did on the RPG Academy again 12 years ago, it was the second one. It's called Lost World. Two of my players were firefighters in real life, right? And I've always been a very cinematic GM, and they were on a ship that was on fire. But it wasn't like fully engulfed. It was just like starting to smolder and pop up. And they needed to get from the deck to the bottom of the hold. And I had described that basically there was an opening on the top deck all the way down to like a door that would open up to let a cargo in and out. And in my head, because the main character or the player had like a big warhammer, was other words. Like in my head, I'm like, he's going to jump off and he's just going to crash through that and land in a superhero pose and it's going to be amazing. He would not do that. Like I kept trying to get him to do that and he would never do it. And after the episode, because we were recording those, I'm like, I was trying so hard to get you to do that. He goes, I would never oxygenate a fire like that because it would have caused it to explode. And I'm like, but this is a movies thing. Like it's not a, he's basically like, no, I was never going to do that because it would blow the ship up basically.
That is the challenge for me when I play modern games that have to do with demolitions, because I was trained on that in the Army. I cannot divorce that real knowledge from character. So, like, I will either play a character who is that expert and have that conversation with the GM in advance, like, really, lean on me before you do something. I'll keep it quiet. I won't use player knowledge, but I will help you with that. Or I will play somebody who knows absolutely nothing about it, so it won't matter to my character.
Right.
But, like, yeah, I get that. That's tough.
All right, so we're already kind of getting long, so we're going to wrap things up here. A couple last things I will say for Leonika. One, Leonika, we are trying to schedule a sample adventure where he would run the game for us here at the RPG Academy, which we would live stream using the second edition quick start adventure. So hopefully within the next month or so, we're going to get that put together. And then you are coming to a Catacon. Are you going to be running Star Trek Adventures at a Catacon?
Absolutely. So at a Catacon, and I'm going to put this out now, and I need to get it up on the site here and get my game submitted so it shows up for everybody to sign up when sign-up time comes. I will be running the Quick Start Adventure. My plan is to run that on the first for the set on Friday, and then I will be running two of my homebrew games for my Star Trek Aegis campaign. Aegis campaign is a Star Trek campaign that is basically the Star Trek campaign I run at conventions, where there's a number of these Aegis teams that go around and do things for Aslan Station. Aslan Station is the home base for our hero ship in the actual play and the home base for our monthly Patreon game. All three of those games feed into each other. So folks who have played Aegis at previous conventions have impacted information that our actual play cast has to engage in their missions. And same thing with the Patreon adventure. So that's why I love that game. But with second edition, I also want to give people the opportunity to really kind of learn the rules. And even though I may know the system, that quick start adventure will give people the opportunity. So what I'm hoping is some folks will sign up, play with me on day one so that they can then come back and play Aegis with me on day two and day three.
Awesome. All right. So with that, we're going to move into Where Have My Fingers Been? And we're actually, that's basically going to be the last thing we do, but we will do audience Q&A because there are a couple people watching. So while we're making silly games with our fingers here, if you want to be thinking of some questions for any or all of us, please do that. Leonika, again, you've been here before, so I think you know how the game works, but we're going to do finger puppets. You are the guest co-host. Would you like to go first in terms of being prompted to give your scene or to prompt Chris or I to give our scene?
I would love to be prompted.
All right, Chris, you got something you want me to go?
I got something.
Perfect.
Sing the song.
You got to sing the song. That's right.
Wow. Where have my fingers been? Where have my fingers been?
Perfect.
All right. Your fingers are on board of a Federation ship. You're the last two alive. There's one escape pod. I should say there's only enough room for one person on that escape pod.
Yeah. It's full of triples.
Benson. You need to get on that pod.
But Captain, if I get on the pod, the critical information that you know will go down with the ship. You allow that.
Ensign, you have a destiny. You have friends that you will make. You have lives that you will save. And you have big lizards on desert planets that you have to beat with rocks after making stupid cannons.
If you insist, Captain. But what? If anything, should I remember from you?
Always outstretch your arms and elongate your sentences.
For this, I will do. And I'll keep my toupee too. Engage.
Excellent. And that's where your fingers have been. Yay!
That is Beta Cannon for the future Captain Jim Kirk.
I caught on.
Not Star Trek Cannon.
All right. So Chris prompted you, so you will prompt me, and then I'll finish up by prompting Chris.
Ooh.
So, again, the cheese tax to New York Tater has to be paid. Where have my fingers been? I said, where have my fingers been?
Your fingers are two LARPers, one veteran, one brand new, stuck in a cheese factory in Wisconsin, trying to get directions to the nearest LARP.
Okay. Are we playing yet? Is this part of the game? No, I told you this we're trying to find the place. Okay, it's kind of out in the woods. It's kind of a cool location, but we need to get directions. I'm hoping some of these people here will help us. But why are we wearing our costumes? I try to explain to you. We don't have time to change when we get there, so we had to drive in our costumes. I feel like this is a test. It is, and you failed. And that's where my fingers have been.
Wow.
Wow, that took a turn.
Yep, that's the way I like to do it. All right, so Chris.
And nobody even bit the rock for it.
Exactly, that's true, yeah.
All right, where have my fingers been? I said, where have my fingers been?
Your fingers are at a catacomb trying to find something to do.
All right, let's go look at the TV. All right, Star Wars game sold out. Yeah, it always is. 3 years I've been trying to get in. I can't get in. Well, what about the Dread game? Yeah, sold out. What about Star Trek? Looks like it sold out too. What about that geek trivia thing? Well, we could try that, but I'm really not a geek. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. Fine. Who is Palpatine's mentor? Well, Plagueis, of course. I mean, geek test passed. Ha ha. Well, let's go to trivia. And that's where my fingers
have been. Yay! And that's where our fingers have been. We did actually have a question come in. So Brodo Bush, again, comes to a catacomb. He's actually going to be doing some demos for us this year. Brings his family. Really cool dude. Asked a question about Dragonbane. Have any of us played it? Do we have any thoughts? So Leewanika, have you played Dragonbane?
I have not, and I have had a few folks talk to me about it. With all the new games that have come out in 2024, it is one of those things. I actually should have mentioned that in my 10 things or whatever, because that is a game that I want to kind of figure out. It seems to get a lot of good comments, but I have not got a chance to play.
Okay, Chris?
Haven't really looked into it much, which shouldn't be a surprise to anybody because I really don't pay attention to social media or the news. So unless one of you guys tells me about it, I don't usually hear about it.
All right.
I'm always willing to try something new.
So I have. I have played it. I'm a big fan of it, actually. I ran the sample adventure, so you can go back and listen to me running the game. And then I have sought out three different sessions at both Origins and Gen Con combined. I think I mentioned it on my Gen Con recap. One of those was one of the worst games I played at Gen Con, and one was maybe my favorite game. So obviously the GM has a lot to do with that. But I really kind of dig it. It's got an interesting vibe. It's enough like D&D that you can kind of figure out what's going on, but it's definitely its own thing. Magic seems really wonky. I've not played it enough. I don't think I've even played a wizard yet, and which is usually what I play in most games. So I can't really say much about how I feel like the wizard would work, but it's just got a cool vibe. I like the system. So just one thing I will mention is that, like, when you're attacking, you don't roll against the monster, you roll against yourself. So basically, like, if you have, like, your skill in sword is 15, as long as you get under a 15, you hit no matter what you're fighting, because you're only under your, so it's very quick. You always know if you hit or if you succeed or critted or crit fumbled. You don't have to have that back and forth. And there are different types of adversaries. So if you're fighting like another, like an NPC, they have to try to hit you. If you're fighting a monster, which I think they use the term monster, but maybe it's beast, I don't know, they always hit. They roll a D6 and or D12, and like that's what happens. So it's very deadly combat when you're fighting like a giant monster, like a big giant spider. It may not miss. There's never going to be it misses you. It's a I rolled a 7. Oh, all of you are webbed, so none of you can move. Now it's your turn again. Oh, I rolled a 15, or I rolled a 5. I bite one of you. You take this much damage, and you might be poisoned. So combat is very deadly, but it's cinematic still and kind of fun. So I'm actually a big fan of Dragonbane. I want to play more of it. I'm actually thinking about maybe trying to start a campaign of it to really kind of deep dive into it. Free League is sponsoring our event this year, and that's actually what they're sending us is a couple of the core sets and like a bunch of the quick starts to give away. So if you are interested in Dragonbane and don't get a chance before Catacon, see me at a Catacon and I will hook you up, my friend. All right, nice. So we will wait a little, couple seconds, see if any other questions come in. But while we're waiting, we will go around the horn and give all of our socials and plugs. Lee Winika, please plug, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. Tabletop Journeys, you can find us on the web at www.tabletopjourneys.com. You can find us on YouTube, long YouTube URL, but if you look for Tabletop Journeys and you see the little blue hexagon with our logo in there and the gold and stuff.
I'll put it in the show notes if they want to find out.
And it'll be in the show notes. If you're interested in anything I talked about and how we do Star Trek and playing Star Trek with us, we do play our monthly Patreon games. They're not all in the paid tier, by the way. We often have an available seat, which we offer to our free patrons. And we are trying to work out some platform stuff so we can have people kind of sit and watch a game live so they get a flow of the whole thing, not just that edited actual play version. The editing on the actual play is not terrible. It's just, or not heavy-handed. It's basically cutting out bathroom breaks and the occasional joke to keep it really cinematic. But there's there, and you can go to our Patreon site, which is www.patreon.com/ttjourneys. For that, and of course, we're on Facebook, Tabletop Journeys. We have a community group. That's our name with the red banner. Or our business page is the logo, the same logo that you'll see in the show notes or whatever. So feel free to do that. My partner Josh and I, we also have our own two blogs, individual blogs on YouTube. I do On the Right Path, which is a blog about this crazy podcast journey, content creation, how to run games. Most recently, one of my more popular videos is a fairly quick hit. It's about 17 to 20-ish minutes on the minion rules that I use at my D&D table. And I actually use them for some other games as well. Not Star Trek, because it doesn't really fit that, but any of the D20 base or 5e type games, I use a certain type of minion rules. And I actually talk about a goblin scenario in the episode before that. So, okay. On the Right Path is also on YouTube, and Josh does Dr. Homebrew, where you'll see him talk about homebrewing various printed adventures. He's right now in the middle of his deep dive into Keys of the Golden Vault.
All right, very cool. Well, again, thank you for being here with us tonight. Thank you for supporting a Catacon with your presence as a special guest and the energy and the vibes and the games and stuff that you're going to bring. I think we're also doing some panels. We might even do a live draft. We're talking about doing that there as well, but I just appreciate you partnering with us here. Chris,
love to, and I'll be at karaoke too, so please make sure there's karaoke.
They're Friday and Saturday.
There is.
Excellent. I'm all in, right, both of those. Sure. Don't schedule me for anything during karaoke time, because that won't happen. I'm gonna sing.
All right Chris, plug, sir.
I mostly the Discord channels. I really don't do a whole lot of other social media. I managed to have a Facebook page, but that's mostly just for groups I'm involved in that I can listen to what's new and what's going on. Otherwise, I will be at a Catacon. And looking forward to that. Be at the faculty retreat in
like 3 weeks.
3 weeks. Yeah. I was trying to do the math.
Yeah.
Like 24 days or something like that. So definitely looking forward to that, because I could use a weekend away of just chilling out and relaxing. The Airbnb is full. I think we're up to 10 people. So.
Oh, sweet. That makes it cheap.
Yeah.
I will sleep assholes to elbows for a cheap night anytime.
Yep. That sounds like what it's about to be. So. I think you might have killed Lee Winika.
I got him right as he was taking a drink.
No spit takes here.
Yeah.
Ooh, you got it.
This is live, baby. I'm gonna be a professional.
Yeah. That's what she said. Yeah. All right. So That's pretty much where you can find me. Otherwise, where can we find you?
Again, I'm on the Discord more than anywhere else. I am also on Facebook. I've got off pretty much all other social medias. I'm still doing the TikTok thing, but it's, again, it's just kind of casual when I'm having fun. I'm not actively trying to grow that, but it, you know, it's always nice when people follow you and they like what you're doing. We had an actual play of Action 12 Cinema that's going out on the Under Common Taste podcast. Ian is actually the one who did my editing. He is also a podcaster. And so we did, and I think it's also like their 200th episode. It's like an anniversary episode. So they brought me on, and then a friend of theirs, and we did a like a wild 80s. We were fighting vampires, but that turned out to be a gang. So it's kind of like the Warriors, but also Escape from New York. A lot of it, there's like a goth IHOP at one point was in there. So it makes no sense, but it's absolutely a perfect representation of what Action 12 Cinema is. So hopefully people will check that out.
I'm in the middle of it right now.
Oh,
like
nice.
Literally, I was listening to it this afternoon, and I had to pause it so we could so we could come on the air. So I'm anxious to finish.
Yeah. So it was a really fun time. I'm really appreciative of having me on. We're continuing to do detention every other week, so you can find us here. It goes up on YouTube as well. But yeah, if you are in the Ohio area, particularly like Miami of Ohio University, where we do our we're not on campus, but we're right off campus. That's where we do our, fall faculty retreat. Basically, if you know, but if you don't know, ask me, I'll tell you, and then you'll know. You can show up, play games. It's a great time. I want to share one quick story just because I gave Jake a hard time about his game. I've been telling, because my kids tend to miss a lot of school. Like they just don't feel good. They don't want to go. And then the mom's a softie, so she'll let them stay home. But we knew they had to miss a day for the faculty retreat because we go up on Thursday. So they're going to miss Friday school no matter what. And then a catacon, they're coming up Thursday. So they're going to miss Friday. So we knew they're going to be missing 2 days of school this, year already. So I've been telling them for like a month, you cannot miss school because we know you're missing those two. If you start missing school, you don't get to go. And Jacob got sick. I mean, he's like actual sick, but he has pushed through. And today Val's like, you can't go to school. You're too sick. We're going to keep you home. He almost cried because he's like, but I don't want to miss daddy's convention. Melted, broke my heart. So I was like, buddy, if you're actually sick, that's fine. Mm-hmm. You can't not go to school when you just don't feel good. Like that's what I'm talking about. So again, it's sad, but it also warms my heart that he cares about this stuff too. And he just, doesn't want to disappoint me. So I must be doing something right as a dad, if not as a game designer and a podcaster. But thank you everybody who's watching now in the future. Thank you, Chris and Leonika, of course, as always. And we'll see you in a couple weeks. If not, we'll see you in September in Oxford, and not then. We'll see you in November in Dayton, Ohio for Catacon. I can't talk. It's late. But we will sign off here as we always do, and that is by saying, if you're having fun,
you're doing it right.
Doing it right.
Thanks. See you next time. Bye-bye, everybody. Yeah.